It's time for hour number two of the Bible study. This is the Ask the Pastor Hour, the hour where you can call in with questions and comments. Set the table if you like. We love table setting. Our numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727 if you'd like to join us. We are currently awaiting the arrival of Pastor Randy Wilkin. He is associated with the Acts 1-8, that's 1:8, Mission Society, and a good friend of the radio station. He's caught up in a little traffic, but has called in and says that he is on his way and will be here shortly. So that gives me some time to promote our website to you. Our address on the web is kfuo.org. I invite you to check that out if you haven't. It's a very up-to-date website. You know, some websites, people put them up and then you go check them and they've got events that happened there like in January because they really haven't looked at their own website for a couple of weeks or months. So that is not the case with our website at kfuo.org. It changes every day. New content all the time. Probably the two best features of the website are the archived long-form and short-form programs. For example, if you pull up kfuo.org, you will see under archived audio yesterday's Bible study conversation with Pastor John Lekomsky as we talked about Romans chapter 12, verses 9 through 21. Pastor Lekomsky is a big favorite with many of our Bible study program listeners, and if you missed it, well, it doesn't mean that it's gone forever. If you have access to the Internet, you can download that hour and listen to it at your convenience. What a concept, huh? You'll also find the Bible quiz there. You'll find programs archived from the morning show, and we are working to get the afternoon show archives up to speed, and soon that will be the case. And so there are a number of options there in terms of long-form programming if you would like to listen to something that perhaps you were not able to listen to when it aired live. There is also on the right side of the website, on the homepage there, you will see a number of short-form programs. By short-form, we mean the programs that last 60 seconds, 90 seconds maybe. These programs are ideal for your church website. And I would encourage you to think about the option of putting links on your own website to these short-form programs. Now, you may think, but you'd be wrong, you may think that what I'm trying to do here is get a toehold on your website so that if you link to Portals of Prayer, for example, you put that on your church website, somebody will click on Portals of Prayer and boom, they'll be gone to our website. But that's not the case. As we would say, a la Ed McMahon, wrong Buffalo Breath. There are five short-form programs listed there. Portals of Prayer, which is a daily devotional program. The Meyer Minute with Dr. Dale Meyer, president of Concordia Seminary, very popular program. The devotional program with Dr. Paul Devanteer that has been around forever, at least since Genesis 3, the program called By the Way. There's also today's verse from God's Word, which is done by Paul Clayton, and Front Porch Parenting, the program which is approaching its 10-year anniversary. I can't believe that that's the case already. Front Porch Parenting with Dr. Mary Mann Simon. All five of those programs are posted on the right side of our homepage, and what I suggest that you think about doing is copying those one or all of those programs onto your homepage. Sometimes people do this with their websites. They think they're doing us a big favor, and that's very nice, very gracious of you. We appreciate that. But they put it somewhere back in their website, and it doesn't really get seen very much. The idea here, what we're trying to do in terms of providing a service for congregations and parishes, is to offer to you a short-form programming opportunity so that when people visit your website, there will be some content there that changes every day so that your website stays fresh. Tomorrow you can hear the new By the Way or the new Meyer Minute, and you don't have to do any work because we change those things here, and people who visit your website will hear the new Dr. Dale Meyer Minute without you doing any work. And when they listen to the Meyer Minute, they will not leave your website. They will stay on your website. So the benefit of listening to that short-form program comes from you, the parish manager of the website. We think it's an outstanding service which allows you to have a website that changes every day, which allows you to deliver a benefit for those people who surf the web and use your individual church websites, and get to hear a popular program like Front Porch Parenting. Seems like a good idea to me, and so I would encourage you to give that some thought. Maybe think about copying those onto your homepage. The buttons, the links, don't have to be all that big. They can be. They don't have to be intrusive, so that you can get them on your homepage there. And then I think you'll find that at your church, your congregation, you will derive a benefit from that. So there are some features of our website that I think that you ought to keep in mind. More and more people visit the website all the time. There are hours and hours, literally days and weeks, of archived programming there from the Bible study, from the morning show, from the afternoon show. And I would encourage you to check it out. Our telephone numbers here are 505-7850 and 1-800-730-2727 if you have a question or a comment. I have Romans 13 on my mind because that is the that was the subject of discussion in the previous hour. For those of you who heard that hour, your comments are welcome as to how you thought we handled that subject. There are a lot of people these days, American Christians, who believe that the Bible doesn't have anything to say about government, and that if a Christian offers an opinion based on Romans 13, that that opinion should not be respected because of our healthy understanding of church and state. So I'm curious as to what you might think. Our numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. When Pastor Randy Wilkin makes his way through traffic and gets here, that is the subject that I'm going to take up with him. And by the way, Diane tells me that this is the day in 1904 that the first Olympic Games to be held in the United States opened up right here in St. Louis. So if you've got a torch, you probably should light it. And if you don't have a torch, you should find like a Bic lighter or one of those wand things and just hold it up there for like 10 ceremonial seconds in honor of May 14th, 1904, when the Olympics opened up here in our fair city of St. Louis. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Here's a caller. Hi, Toby. You're on the Bible study.
Hi, Chuck.
Good morning.
I wanted to comment about Carla because people generally don't tell the full story of Carla, how she became a Christian in prison, and she married a minister while she was in prison, and I'm sure he rallied all these ministers to come to her defense. And the true story of her is that when she all of her appeals were exhausted, she urged everybody to, you know, spoke of her faith.
Hold on 1 second. Let me bring listeners who have maybe have just joined us and didn't hear the first hour. When you say Carla, you're referring to Carla Faye Tucker.
Yeah.
Who was executed back in 1998 in the state of Texas in association with a murder conviction. Okay, so go ahead.
So she said to everybody, "Don't feel sorry for me because I'm going home to be with my father." And she was very upbeat about that. She kept a good front up, you know, and she was executed. At the same time, there was a man who was going to be executed that also claimed to be Christian, and as he was led away, he was cursing everybody under the sun. So who was the real Christian, you know? And she was telling everyone about her father in heaven. She was became a great testimony for God, you know.
So do you think that she should have been shown clemency, that she should...
No.
No?
No.
Okay.
Because her crime was very vicious. Nobody ever brings that out. And she admitted that. And I feel that because of her crime, she became a Christian. And so, you know, I would hate to be the one to pull the switch.
Yeah.
And I would hate to have to tell somebody to pull the switch, you know. It's hard to be in those positions. She gave a great testimony of her life, you know.
Maybe her testimony had power just because of the circumstances in which it was given.
That's right. She became a Paul. She was, you know, a vicious murderer. And because of her imprisonment, she became a Christian.
Thank you for the call.
You're welcome.
Our numbers are 505-7850 and 1-800-730-2727. Kind of interested in what you think about our conversation on Romans chapter 13 or anything else that might be on your mind. Let's talk with Kay. Hi, Kay. You're on the Bible study.
Hi, Chuck. How are you? Good morning.
I'm fine.
Good. I just had heard your comments earlier about the death penalty and was remembering a program that Family Shield did, and we still have that tape. With two pastors, it was an hour-long program, and I appreciate what you were sharing. But I also had a thought about the last caller, that is that just because someone is cursing or doing something wrong doesn't necessarily make them not a Christian. She said something about, well, he was cursing, and of course it was his last minute, so it's probably not the best way to do it, but we need to really be careful that we don't decide to judge other people, because God, you know, God takes care of all of that through the blood of Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I appreciate your point. We certainly wouldn't want to judge the Apostle Peter based on watching him and his behavior there in the courtyard of the high priest. That would not be the full story. And somebody who is terrified by death, even if they are Christian, might not exemplify the best behavior. Pastors tell me that in some situations when they're at the deathbed, with a Christian who is dying, their behavior is not all that exemplary on some occasions.
Yeah.
So I think you're right. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
All righty. Kay Meyer, host of Family Shield here on KFUL. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Tom Baker's on the line here. Pastor Baker, you were referenced by Peter Kurowski in our previous hour. I think, if I'm quoting him correctly, as a man who loves Romans 13. Would that be an accurate description?
That would mean there's other parts of the Bible I don't love.
No.
So that would be an accurate.
No, sir, I reject that assertion.
Yes, I understand.
Do you have a deep appreciation for Romans 13?
Anytime there's a chapter that makes clear distinctions, I have a deep appreciation, and that is one of the best chapters for the distinctions between the two kingdoms.
As a man who has a pretty solid skill in the ability to make distinctions, you would suggest, or I would infer from your comments, that there is some confusion on the subject of church and state in Romans 13, which make those distinctions all the more valuable. Would that be a correct assumption?
Yes.
What kind of confusion do you see, certainly in the American culture, as it pertains to the issues of Romans 13?
I would say that for many Christians, they would believe that we need to take the kind of righteousness that God demands for salvation and plant it or implant it into the government. And I think that is not making a proper distinction.
Say that again now.
They would take a look what God demands of them as Christians and therefore plant that in the government. Say that ought to be the rules of the government. In other words, like the Muslims, the religion of Islam, they think there's only one law from God that applies to all people in all circumstances, and they don't make a distinction between the requirements God has for becoming saved and for living one's life here on earth.
So, for example, in the Bible we have, I'm the Lord your God, you shall have no other gods before me.
Right.
You are saying that it would be inappropriate then for the state,
yes,
to take that first commandment and make it the law of the land.
Exactly. And the Bible is clear for Christians that we ought to baptize children, but it would be wrong for the government to make a law that every time a child is born, he or she is baptized.
Tom, thank you so much. Appreciate the insight. Pastor Tom Baker, who will be here on our program, actually on our broadcast at 1:05 today with Law and Gospel. Maybe we've stimulated some thinking for him. We'll have to wait and see. Pastor Randy Wilkin has joined us. Thank you, Randy. I know you were struggling with traffic. Traffic can be a bear these days.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I wasn't expecting it.
But you made it, and we appreciate your making the effort. I don't know if you had a chance to listen to our 10 o'clock hour on the Bible study or not, but we're talking about Romans chapter 13, separation of church and state. And I thought to myself, interesting question for Pastor Randy Wilkin, who is involved in a mission society. You're involved in mission work. You're involved, in a way, in trying to help people who maybe are underprivileged or disadvantaged, mm-hmm. people who are receiving some benefits from the state, for example, perhaps receiving support through the government. So your work probably involves some, shall we say, overlap with the benefits that are provided by the state. Would that be a correct assumption?
Very much so. And it's the separation becomes difficult once in a while when we're receiving tax credits or, you know, federal funding or anything like that while we're doing the work. Because sometimes they put all kinds of restrictions on what you can do. Can't proselytize, you can't, you know, tell somebody about Jesus, you can't tie anything together, you can't require somebody to come to a Bible study.
So what are the primary activities of the Acts 1:8 Mission Society?
Interesting. One of the things, I just got back from Mexico, and we went down there and we did a servant project. We helped to put a roof on a church. But what I told them is, I'll come down, we'll help you put your roof on, but you need to show up. Because most of the time when I've seen servant projects, I've seen groups of Americans go to foreign countries, and they do all the work. And the people stand on the side and they watch. And then after they're done, the people are so, it seems that they're so grateful, and they thank them, and they send them off, and everybody feels really good. But what I have found is, then the people expect you to come back and fix whatever you built, or, you know, come back and do for them again. Well, we told this little congregation in Rio Bravo, we told them, we'll come and we'll work with you. You send your people. Your people can come whatever time, you know, and come and work with us. So the first day that we got there on a Sunday. It was late Sunday afternoon, Sunday evening, and we had a they were worshiping. They worshiped between 5 and 7 in the evening. And so we got there, got everything set up. Monday morning, we showed up to start doing the roof. Now, this is about a 2,700-square-foot roof, so it's not extremely large, but it's fairly large. And we got there, and everybody stood around, and we started putting shingles on the roof. And I only took a group of four people. It was me, one other guy, and two women went down there. And knowing that four of us cannot do this roof in just 3 days, but they brought their people in. And we showed them how to do the roof. As a matter of fact, had guys up there that could translate for us, had no idea how to do a roof. We showed them in just a few minutes how to start to put the shingles on. I was amazed. And one day we finished about 2/3 of the roof. In 2 days, we finished the whole thing. And it was mainly done by their people, by the people there, by the pastor, and others that came, and they were carrying shingles up, etc.
Well, this raises an interesting question, because in this case, the governing authorities are the government of Mexico.
That's right. Yeah.
Do they have laws regarding the quality of building, or who can do it, or unions, or what happens when you go to another country to do this kind of work?
As long as it's mission work, when we went over the border, they said as long as we're doing mission work. So somebody from the church came and met us at the border to explain that we're coming to do mission work. They allowed us to go. We can't go there and do it for pay. So they couldn't pay us for doing it. So it all has to be volunteer. As far as unions, most where we work, we're not in the higher end neighborhoods. We're in the lower end where people are living in cardboard boxes and, you know, huts with no windows. So they leave us alone pretty much.
Do you have somebody who's familiar with Mexican law so that you don't get in trouble, get arrested by the Mexicans, thrown in jail? Mm-hmm. Where's Pastor Wilkin? Well, we don't know. He's disappeared in Mexico somewhere.
Well, you bring up a really interesting point because that's exactly what we need to have. Yes, we have a pastor down in Laredo, and basically he's our contact with these Lutheran churches, and they're Lutheran churches that we're working with. And he's the one that gets us set up and makes sure that we're not, you know, going afoul of the law. Because one guy, his name was Manuel. And Manuel, really interesting man. He was probably about our age, maybe a little bit older. And Manuel had five kids. And these five kids, they were 7, 8, 10, 12, and 14, I think, right around there. So he had these five kids. And his wife had left him. So he has no means. I mean, he has no family, you know, no one to help support him. He came and volunteered working with us. And he was carrying shingles up onto the roof. Well, the day before we left, it was a Tuesday night. And we find out late Tuesday night, he went to drop his child off at school. But the passenger side door didn't open. So what he did is he opened up the driver's side door to let her out, and a bicyclist hit the door and was in the hospital. They put him in jail. And we were all floored by that because we'd all heard these stories where they'll put you in jail and that's it. So we're finding, yeah, we have to stay really on top of all this stuff so we don't end up doing something.
Now, here's an idea.
Mm-hmm.
From what I hear about the Mexican government, the Mexican people don't even want to live in Mexico. They want to live in the United States. We're all familiar with that problem. But that the drug pushers and the corrupt influences in Mexico have overrun the government, and the government is corrupt. You know what? Just don't go to Mexico.
Hmm.
Just forget about Mexico. Look at their government, heaven's sake. What do you say?
I look at the people. It can be the government. It can be, you know, we have, oh, believe it or not, we have corruption up here. And we have...
You're kidding.
Yeah, it's hard to believe, huh? But I look at the people, and it's the people that we go to work with. You know, people that, they want to spread the love of Jesus Christ in their community, and that's what they're doing. This pastor that we went to go see, that we helped with the roof, this pastor was... he has a mission.
Hold on to that story.
Go ahead.
We'll hear the pastor's story on the other side of the break. You're listening to the Bible Study. Pastor Randy Wilkin is here with us today. He is with the Acts 1-8 Mission Society. Our numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We'll be right back.
I'm Phyllis Wallace, host of Woman to Woman. No surprise, love is a risk. It brings great joy, and it can leave you vulnerable and open to potential pain. When you give unconditional love to somebody who rejects that love or manipulates you through it, do you ever get over that pain? And are you ever willing to risk loving again? Hear how one family, reeling from rejection by their daughter, still reaches out in love. Join me, Woman to Woman, talk you can trust.
Saturday mornings at 9:30 on AM 850 KFUO.
There are any number of reasons you might want to contact AM 850 KFUO. You might have something happening at your church that you think our listeners would like to know about. Send us the information for our daily datebook features. Or you might have a question about a show. Or you might have an idea that you want to share or an opinion you want to register. Send us your questions and concerns. Just go to KFUO.org and click the contact button. We welcome your message anytime at AM 850 KFUO.
What bird can bring down a horse? The answer next on today's Creation Moments. And now, here's our Creation Moments host, Ian Taylor.
It was the largest bird that ever lived. It stood 10 to 12 feet tall and could easily outrun a horse. Being a meat eater, this fossil bird, which has been nicknamed Terror Bird, possibly did chase horses and bring them down with its sharp talons. The only thing that limited this creature's terrible abilities was its inability to fly. Terror Bird existed in a world which also included other large birds. One had a wingspread of 17 feet. In the warm climate of long ago, ferns towered 150 feet tall. Huge alligators, marsupials, and a strange mix of other creatures hid within the forests of fig and sequoia trees. Where would one find such a place? Of all places, Antarctica. Yes, it was a long time ago, although not as long ago as evolutionists claim. The location of these fossil creatures indicate that the Earth was once much warmer. Similar fossil remains have also been found in Siberia, Alaska, and the Arctic. It sounds as if a tropical forest is being described when Genesis talks about mist rising from the ground, watering the plants. If the Earth really is warming up, maybe it's just now returning to normal. This is certainly not something which the ancients of the Near East would have made up, and this offers further evidence of God's authorship of Scripture.
For a printed transcript of today's program, visit our website at creationmoments.com or call us toll-free at 1-800-42-BIBLE. And be sure to join us next time for another Creation Moment, proclaiming evidence of God's truth.
Hi, Paul Clayton urging you to join my family as an AM 850 KFUO Day sponsor in May. Perhaps you too are celebrating a graduation, anniversary, or birthday. Maybe you're thankful for being blessed with a godly mother or wife. Whatever the occasion, Day sponsorship enables you to express your thoughts worldwide on AM 850 KFUO. Contact us right now and your donation may still qualify KFUO for a matching grant. Contact us today and ask about being a Day sponsor during May.
Clean Air St. Louis reminds you with temperatures rising and the risk for poor air quality following suit, there's no better time to go green and do your share for cleaner air. Simple green steps you take each day can reduce the amount of harmful pollution-causing ozone emissions in our air. Carpooling or taking transit to work, recycling papers and drink containers, and even turning off appliances and lights that aren't in use can help our environment and our air quality. To learn more, see cleanair-stlouis.com.
You're listening to the Ask the Pastor Bible Study. I'm Chuck Rathard. Our springboard is Romans chapter 13 from the 10 o'clock hour. We've been talking about doing ministry in the context or in the shadow of the government, a government that is sometimes oppressive or perhaps corrupt. Our guest today is Pastor Randy Wilkin, pastor associated with the Acts 1-8 Mission Society, does work here in the St. Louis area, also does mission work, certainly at least as far as Mexico. He was going to tell us a story that he has on a pastor, but if you just hold on a second, Pastor Wilkin, let's take this phone call here and talk to Marie, and we can find out what her thoughts are. Hi, Marie, you're on the Bible study. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
I just had to call because Pastor Randy headed up a mission trip to China back when our son Zach was a senior in high school. And that was an oppressive government that would not let you even mention the name of Jesus or proselytize anyone. But God always provides an opportunity in that when he was over there with Pastor Randy and a group of awesome people, he worked side by side with a communist young man that was about his same age. They could not speak. They just had a work ethic that was just really cool that spoke volumes. As they sweated side by side for a few days in digging out a foundation for a church in, I think it was Hunan. I'm not sure. Pastor Randy can correct me. after a number of days of working with this young man, the young man pointed at Zach's cross that he got at a national youth gathering and said, like, what is that? It's made of nails, this cross was. And he kind of pointed and with his face expressed interest. That was the opportunity the Lord provided in this oppressive government that would not allow Zach to say anything unless he was asked. that question on his face led to Zach asking for an interpreter to come over, took off the cross, and gave it to the young man to hold as he presented the gospel. And as the young man started to return
proud of this kid.
Tears.
Very much.
This young man then, when he tried to give the cross back to Zach, closed his hand around the cross. The young man wore the cross then, and somewhere in China, the Spirit has prepared this young man for the gospel message, and we pray for this young man. I don't remember his name, but God knows him. Mm-hmm. And we continue to pray for this young man's faith as he wears this cross, or at least owns this cross, that he got the message, the gospel message of how Christ loved him enough to die.
Thank you, Marie.
Thank you.
Pastor Wilkins' head is going up and down here. He's nodding. Oh, yeah. You remember that day?
Oh, absolutely. That was Zach. It was awesome because Zach went with me. And it's a testimonial to God's work and the Holy Spirit versus us. Because I wish that maybe here in the United States we would do more of this, realizing it's, you know, show them versus constantly telling them, because words become pretty hollow once in a while.
Show them the walk, and a little more walk, a little less talk.
Maybe. Absolutely. This story about Zach, it's as if it happened yesterday, and I can vividly see it, them sitting on this pile of rocks. but it was... There was a lot of people there. There was a man. And not to cut short Zach's story because it's so important, there was another man that came, and we thought he was just a worker. And he all of a sudden jumped in, and he's starting to help us, and I thought he was one of the Chinese workers there. And they only let us work there for 3 days. And the reason was, you're not allowed to work in China, even for free, as missionaries. Makes no difference. You cannot do any work. And what they told us, we were way down in Kunming. And Kunming is right north of, just north of Vietnam. And where we were is Ma Long, a real small little village that some Christian women had saved up all their money and bought this piece of property. And through World Missions, we helped to build this church. And we wanted to go there. We wanted to actually work. And they said, fine, they'll give us 3 days. And this is the reason. Day one, somebody's going to see us. Day two, the word gets to Beijing. Day three, they're flying somebody down from Beijing to check it out, and they wanted us gone by day four. And that's what we did. And in those 3 days...
Well, now, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. Did you violate Romans 13 there, Pastor?
No, we went to the officials.
Oh, okay.
No, we didn't do anything.
Okay.
Oh, we went to... Actually, we did the whole process. We went to the officials in Ma Long. And we said, would you allow us to do this? And they all agreed. And they just said, we're going to give you permission. And it's our right to give you permission to do this.
So they can deal with the guys from Beijing.
Well, see, by the time they got down from Beijing, it's called, oh, they just happened to stop by and just wanted to help. That was it. And you know, then we would be gone.
Interesting.
So it's kind of like you're in that gray area.
Sure,
So,
but it's their gray area.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was awesome, because this man comes along and he starts working with us day one. Day two, he's there. On day three, all of a sudden he comes by and I don't see him working with us. And I've got pictures of this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And on day three, he's not there working, and all of a sudden comes by with his wife, and he's got a little cart, and they basically collect plastic, and I guess they recycle that, and that's how they live. And his wife was there, and he brought his little child. And he stands there, and I've got pictures of this man with these, you know, just dusty, gnarly hands, and he's holding his child and his wife, and I got a picture of the both of them. Same thing, just what Marie said, you know, we don't know his name, but God does. And my prayer has been that somehow this is the first Christian church that has been built in this city. And it's kind of on the backside of a main street, but this guy walks by all the time, and my prayer is that he started to go to that church. I may never get back there to see it, but I know that God is the one that's faithful.
Wonder if that location was affected by the earthquake in China.
Probably not. That looked like it was a little bit farther north.
I think if you're talking about just north of Vietnam, mm-hmm. I think probably far enough away not to be devastated.
Right. It may have been shaken up.
Do you know people there?
Yes, we do. We actually have missionaries there. So,
we've gone a little bit off the, mm-hmm. The original subject here before the break. Can you go back to your pastor story that...
Yes, this pastor in...
Mexico?
In Mexico, Rio Bravo. It was an old building which was their first church. It had literally fallen down. It had gotten so bad it was built with wood. They do concrete now down there because of the termite problem. And it fell. And now what they've done is they built another little chapel on the property and built a couple of little buildings. And one's a clinic and one's, he just calls it his mission. And we go there, and it's in the poorest section of Rio Bravo. I mean, it is. I used to be the pastor in East St. Louis, and East St. Louis looks like, you know, it's a well taken care of city compared to this. So, what he's in the middle of, you know, in the middle of the poverty, and that's what he does, his mission work. And what we did is we had this young lady, Pat Fick, went with us. And she was playing the guitar, and she knows Spanish songs. And we go into this mission, and only five children showed up. And I thought, oh, not a very good mission. That was my first reaction. So we're there for five kids, and all right, he doesn't really work this mission very well. Well, within about 5 minutes, we had 50 kids there. And...
Premature judgment there.
Oh, you betcha.
Did you repent?
Yes, I did. Yeah. And then an old man shows up, and just this old, weathered-faced old man walks in, and he hugs the pastor, so I know the pastor knows him, and he stands there, and he has this very, very dazed look to him, not as in he's drunk or anything like that, just from age, you know, just a very... And he may be partially blind, I'm not sure. And he stood there, and as Pat was playing, he was clapping and singing, and along with these children. And the guy came up to us, and he gave us a hug. I don't know what he said, but he just comes up and has to give us a hug. And he gave me a kiss on the cheek, said something, and he left. And I says, here in the midst of poverty, and that's where he was living, in the midst of poverty, this man had joy in his heart. And wanted to pass that joy on to us. But if we, boy, the price of gas just went up and we're all just, you know, singing the blues. And we're all upset and we can't be joyous. And this man has nothing. But yet he passed the joy on to us. That's what we want
to
be about.
Starting to feel the sting of your comments there, Pastor Wilkin. But you're right. We're spoiled in this country, are we not?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But here in this country also, we have a little project going on here. Now, somebody had asked us, and I get this comment constantly, why are you going to China? Why are you going to Mexico? Why are you going to these foreign countries? We have a lot of stuff to do here. Why don't you do it here in the United States? And I look at them dead in the eye and say, that's what we're doing. We're doing it here as well. We're doing it in, I just went up to a meeting in College Hill, North St. Louis. And it's the same thing. I won't do for somebody. We're not going to come into an area, well-intentioned, loving Christians go into an area, and they see poverty, and they say, we're going to fix it. And what they do is they kick everybody out of their way. We're going to renovate this neighborhood. And then now you guys have a nice neighborhood to live in, except for the people can't live there anymore because you've actually kicked them out because you've renovated, put new homes in there. They can't afford those. You have people that have been living in this area, College Hill, for over 30 years, and their houses are in, you know, terrible shape, and they want to fix them, but it's their neighborhood. So what's happening? Marie Kinker from, Human Care and World Relief at the LCMS office has been working up there, and I am so in awe because what she's been doing is actually getting the people to come and say, this is what we want to do. As small as it might be, they built a garden, and the people were raving about it. Now they want to do something else. But together, that's what we want to be about. So we're going to be working with them up in College Hill.
So what's your opinion of the government, whether it's a corrupt government in Mexico, a dictatorship in China, or maybe just some oppressive building codes that make it hard to, you know, fix up a house in North St. Louis. What's your opinion of the government and the work you do in the context of Romans 13?
I heard you say, I was listening before, and I heard somebody talk about Jesus standing before Pilate, and he respected, I'm not sure what the word was, respected Pilate, showed him due respect. I know corruption is there, and I know that there is no government that is not corrupt. Not a single one.
There is no government that's not corrupt. Wow.
Yeah, and so I know that.
I mean, I know some governments are worse than others, but label them as all of them as corrupt, that's pretty strong.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but they are, because everybody's looking out for themselves. You have a presidential election going on, and all three have an agenda, and I don't care who it is. They have backers. They have money people behind them. They're not doing it for the people, and because they're concerned about the people, they are doing it for themselves, for, you know, other reasons, not altruistic. And I know the governments are corrupt, but we still have to work through them. I know the Chinese government was corrupt, but we're finding the people that...
Yeah, the church is corrupt in some cases.
Oh, yes.
Corruption is not limited just to the state.
You got it, and that's exactly correct. As long as we're here on this earth, there is nothing that is not going to be touched by sin. The governments, the church, no matter what we're looking at, they're all corrupt. And it's not going to be until Christ comes back, then you're going to have, you know, perfection. Then you're going to have paradise. But until that time...
You know, when it comes to corruption, there is a difference between flawed and ruined.
Okay.
There are some governments that are worse than others.
Oh, absolutely.
Others, are there not? So you're not just throwing the whole government structure everywhere out with the baby in the bathwater, are you?
Oh, no, no. And you are right. Yeah, the, let me see. When I was in the Marine Corps, there was Cambodia, and you had Pol Pot. And he was killing people left and right. Now, that was a government that had to end, and it did. So broken, yeah, totally, you know, there's nothing good left to it, pretty well. And I'm not saying that the United States has that or China or, well, somewhat with China, but, you know, Mexico. We all have things. We have to work within the government to get anything done.
So... You know, I don't know enough about the Acts 1-8 Mission Society to maybe ask an intelligent question here, but I'll ask it anyway, see if it fits. I would assume that when, in the current case, whatever you think of faith-based initiatives, the sitting president has gone in that direction to sort of increase... The overlap between church and state as it pertains to faith-based initiatives, which I understand to mean that the government knows that it cannot accomplish all of the social advances it would like to accomplish. It's going to have to depend on various agencies, profit and non-profit, secular and faith-based, in order to do that. And so, if I understand the situation correctly, the President of the United States took an initiative to see to it that tax money could maybe be available to otherwise church agencies in order to achieve the greater good of social advancement. That's my understanding of it. Does that affect you? Does faith-based initiatives affect the Acts 1-8 Mission Society?
Yes, it does.
Do you think it's a good thing or a bad thing? What does Romans 13 say when the national government has an initiative to provide tax money to a faith-based institution?
It's good and bad.
In the good.
Yes, absolutely.
You guys.
In the good is that people are being helped. We are participating. Well, we're looking for grants to do a reentry program for ex-offenders, And we can't do that on our own because there's so many that need to be retrained, and that's what we're doing. We're retraining ex-offenders, teaching them skills, giving them self-esteem, and building them up also in the Lord.
What is an ex-offender?
Somebody that just got out of jail.
Okay.
We don't do violent or sex offenders. We can't do those two. But we will take anybody else. Now that we partner up with the government, and they give us money to retrain these guys. That's one. That's,
you know,
the good.
Some folks would say that's absolutely out of bounds. That's abominable that the government would give you. You're church based. Mm-hmm. What do you say to that person?
That's actually, and I might be controversial here, but actually that was one of the things the church was supposed to be doing at the beginning, is taking care of those that are downtrodden, those that have nowhere else to turn, those that are...
Well, that's where the church, that's where the hospitals and the orphanages came from in early American history, came
absolutely
from the church.
And we gave it up, and we've turned it over to the government. I'm not totally in agreement with taking federal funding, and the reason is because there comes the bad. Eventually they're going to come in and they're going to start putting stipulations on. You got this large organization and you've grown this organization to thousands of people, and the next thing you know, now you want us to keep funding you. Now you have to do this, stop doing this, you can't have any crosses wherever you're working, etc. And all of a sudden they start to change you. And we'll accept as long as they don't tell us that these are the things we have to do or we can't do. We can't require guys to come to a Bible study, but I never require anybody to come to a Bible study. Once you get to know them, you give them an opportunity and they come. I don't know of any church that requires their members to go to a Bible study. Now, some might try, but it doesn't really work.
So... do you think that the faith-based initiative is a good thing? Don't say good and bad.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, by good, I mean you think it should continue. By bad, do you think it should stop?
I think it should continue. But then you just have to keep watching it, because then all of a sudden you become, the church cannot become funded by the government. And as long as the church doesn't, these are faith-based organizations, kind of like a RSO, Recognized Service Organization, with the LCMS. It can do things that the LCMS can't, and that's what we're going to become. We're applying.
The next president, whether it's Clinton, Obama, or McCain, might put an end to this.
Mm-hmm. And if they do, okay, we're going to keep going. With or without the federal government's help, it makes no difference. We're going to keep going. And maybe that would be a good thing, because it will put back into the church's hand, these are the things that we have started, now you continue it as the church.
So you have headquarters here in the St. Louis area?
Yes, we do.
Where is that?
It's 1126 South Kings Highway, just south of Barnes Jewish Hospital.
And are you doing work? Obviously you've been in China, you've been in Mexico, you're doing work here in the St. Louis area?
Right now we're renovating the building at 1126 South Kings Highway, and we are going to be working with a group up in College Hill. And we're also, I have to tell you this, we got one of the things that's amazing is we have been able to get into the Concordia colleges, and I just put the word out in these Concordia colleges, we need volunteers, interns if you want to call it, but I can't pay you, you have to come, we'll give you a place to sleep, but I need some help. We have 5 interns coming. All of them said, we'll find our own money, we'll find our own jobs, we believe in what you're doing, we want to be a part of it, and I'm absolutely amazed. One of the things one of the young ladies is going to be doing is working with me in East St. Louis. The Southern Illinois District wants to, we have our school over there, we have a church over there, and President Miller and I have been talking about it. Why can't we have more than one church, more than one church in East St. Louis? And everybody looks at you and thinks you're crazy. East St. Louis, you never start another church, and actually that's what we want to do. either grow the church there or build another one. So we're going to be going into East St. Louis, getting into people's homes and helping them renovate their homes, getting to know them. But only helping, not doing it for them.
So if a listener wanted to, join the Acts 1-8 Mission Society? If I want to volunteer, do you need people to do maybe office work?
Mm-hmm.
Not very good at putting on a roof maybe, but do you need people to do office work? Do you take those kind of volunteers?
Office work, website. Let's see what else. Office work, website. There's a lot of research that needs to be done. When you were talking about Mexico, the laws, et cetera, yeah, all that stuff needs to be done. And, if they would want to, they can call us, 314-533-2122, and that goes to our main office.
533-2122. Do you accept donations of building material?
Yes.
If somebody owns a...
Absolutely. Building materials.
Lumber yard or something like that. Somebody wants to donate some shingles or something, you take that?
Yep, absolutely.
So what's on the horizon for you? Got another mission trip coming up?
We're going to California this July.
That's almost a mission trip there.
Yep.
California is almost a foreign country.
Yeah, exactly. Pretty much.
If you're in California and you're listening to me here on the Internet, I mean that with the greatest respect. California is a huge state with a huge economy. It's almost a country in itself.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we're going out there in July. But this summer, anybody that would want to come and work with us, we have servant groups coming here from around the country. All the way from Texas to Minnesota to Ohio and Florida are coming up, and they're working with us through the month of June, part of July, and the month of August. So we kind of set.
You have a busy summer.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So if anybody wants to come out, they're welcome to come.
Area code's 314 and the number 533-2122.
Correct.
And should they ask for you, or should they ask for somebody in particular if they want to come?
Oh, they can talk to Pat.
Pat?
Mm-hmm.
Ask for Pat. Thank you, Pastor. Thanks for fighting the traffic and coming in here and sharing some of those stories with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Pastor Randy Wilkin works with the Acts 1-8 Mission Society and has been our guest here in this Ask the Pastor Hour on the Bible study. Tomorrow, we will finish Romans chapter 13 with Pastor Stephen Tice, our good friend from St. Paul Lutheran Church in Columbia. And our Ask the Pastor guest will be the Reverend Dr. Paul Holtorf at Concordia University in Seward. Just got the Great Teacher Award out there, I think. We'll talk with him tomorrow. Thanks for listening.
Listen to Chuck Rathard and guests Monday through Friday at this same time on The Bible Study. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for The Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the Internet at kfuo.org. For a free copy of The Bible Study, please visit the audio archive section of our homepage. That's kfuo.org. The Bible Study is a broadcast service of Worldwide KFUO.